I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. I've just started reading a compelling, gripping, and intense book, Being Uncle Charlie, A Life Undercover with Killers, Kingpins, Bikers, and Drug Lords. Its author, Bob DC, joins me now. For 23 years, he was a member of the Ontario Provincial Police, and most of those years were spent undercover. His own personal skills, intellect, quick wit, and confidence helped him get along with all manner of criminal element, from the Russian mobsters to motorcycle gangs. DC infiltrated the best of them and gained a long string of convictions. The so-called Mr. Big technique is something that Mr. DC is familiar with, and I'll ask him about that, its effectiveness, and the controversy surrounding it now. He recently retired from the OPP as a detective inspector and joins me now from here in Vancouver. The book is published by Random House and co-written with Mark Ebner. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Bob DC. Mr. DC, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So the beginning of the book talks about where you grew up. I guess your parents are both from Ireland, and they came over here, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. When was it in growing up that you wanted to go into policing?
You know, probably when I was a little boy, and then that seemed to fade for a while. I guess it would be in university when I made the conscious decision to join the police. Still, I had no idea about undercover even at that time.
You'd also considered going into the CFL, right?
Yeah, I suppose. In hindsight, I'm glad I chose what I chose.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the most interesting thing that I read in that part of your book was that if you'd gone into the CFL, you'd still have to drive cab or something to supplement your income.
I would think so. And, yeah. You know, hindsight's 20/20, and I probably would have watched a lot of games from the sidelines.
So, yeah, one of the first assignments you get once you become an officer is you go up north, I guess, in northern Ontario, a town called Geraldton. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, that was my my first posting.
Yeah. Well, what did that time up there tell you about, say, the native experience? And because it's quite instructive as to in the book about how they react to the police and how the police perhaps deals with, say, natives that they encounter along the way.
Yeah, it's, you know, for really for a young kid coming out of university and then out of police college and then sent to such a remote part of the province, it was jaw-dropping at times. I had no idea what I was in for, and I had no idea the plight of some of the people there, and it was a quick learning curve being that far up north.
Yeah, and then was it soon after that that you went into undercover work, or?
It was actually, yeah. And going into an undercover unit, it's almost they find you as much as you find them. And during the first 2 years up north, I had an opportunity to meet with them being the Thunder Bay Drug Unit, and work with them. And we hit it off very well. I guess they recognized that I may have a few of those crazy vampire traits that they were looking for. So that's how it came about.
Now, it's not the sort of line of policing work that most cops like, right?
No, it's a sacrifice beyond belief. If you you're essentially putting your home life and family life, if you have one, on hold, and you're going to immerse yourself in this work to be effective.
Were you married already?
I was not. No.
Throughout your career, you eventually get married, you have kids. What's the private life like? And I guess you do have to seal both off so that they don't really interact with one another. But how do you do that in a city that you live in?
Yeah, the family and close friends are well insulated, I mean, even to this day. But it certainly is a sacrifice for them as well. They simply have to accept the fact that if I'm out with them and I suddenly get up and walk away, or I don't introduce them to someone I'm talking to, or, you know, disappear, not to worry, if you can imagine, but it's just for their safety and mine and everyone's concern. So it is it's quite a sacrifice for close friends and family to endure.
Did the undercover life and, say, your private life, did they ever meet? Like, were there any close calls, say?
There were a few close calls, but nothing that came of anything. What the tiring part of the undercover life was when you weren't working undercover and you really couldn't do the things that you wanted to do, a ball game, a hockey game, maybe a restaurant. You just had to eliminate any chance of that happening. So even your normal life had to be somewhat calculated.
Yeah. The book opens. It's quite a wonderfully written opening. Where you, I guess this was the first time that you, or you just joined the Kingston Drug Unit, I guess.
Yeah, it was. I'd been that story. I'd been working undercover for a while.
Oh, I see.
And had transferred into the Kingston Unit, and that was one of the more refreshing, if you will, projects, because that was a high-level project, and it allowed me just to be a straight-up bad guy drug dealer, so I didn't have to worry about a fictitious job or anything else. I bumped into a biker clubhouse in the middle of nowhere, and saw that they had all my colleagues' names and license plates posted on the wall, all except mine, and number 6 was blank.
Yeah, yeah. In a situation like that, I guess you were trying to ingratiate yourself with the biker gang, and subsequently you talk to them to so that they get the cut of your jib, and if you're, you know, one of them, say.
Right.
Does it ever happen where you're I mean, in a situation like that, where you're just terrified, perhaps, about getting found out? And what would be the worst thing that would happen? I guess, would they kill you right there if they did?
Well, you know, I didn't really dwell on the violence or the death part. I certainly knew it wasn't going to be a happy ending, regardless of who found out. But I didn't dwell on it. I just maintain that the calm demeanor. You just act like anyone else would act if you were a bad guy, we'll say.
Yeah. Hey, that's one of the things that in reading your book that I find particularly instructive, not necessarily to get to know bad guys or criminals, but I mean, it's how to some of the skills that you have in terms of gaining someone's trust. There's a lesson there. What did you do that was effective?
You know, I started out in the first undercover job, and through some incredibly good mentors, was instructed to keep everything extremely simple and as close to the truth as humanly possible, save and except the policeman part.
Yeah.
So when I had to recount stories of childhood or where I lived or anything that people would talk about in their past, they were all the real stories of the real events that happened in life. And the other thing too, I didn't try to be somebody that I wasn't in any means whatsoever. I built on the very first undercover job, and I built that character and enhanced him right to the end.
And I guess the Irish background, the gift of the gab, that sure helped, right?
That certainly didn't hurt, I'll tell you that for free.
Yeah, yeah. Now, having immersed yourself with the criminal element and getting to know these guys quite well, do you understand better, say, why one goes into a life of crime?
You know, I do. And if you break down the life of crime as a career, we'll say, there's as many reasons for choosing that career as there are for choosing accounting or plumbing and heating.
Policing?
Policing. People are people, and criminal or not, I met some actually nice people, and I met some pretty evil people, but you can meet the same types of people in virtually any job or occupation.
Well, what's it like to be in a bust, and whoever's being arrested knows for the first time that you were undercover all along?
Yeah, the takedown or the bust is extremely stressful situation because the event's been planned and coordinated and coming for quite some time. There's two rather large emotions that go through or went through my mind at the time. First was the relief of the project being over, which is tremendous. And then secondly, the reaction of the person or persons who are going down. I was fortunate enough, if you can call it that, that the people that did go down when they did weren't all that violently mad. It's more of a game, and they understood that in the game sometimes you win and sometimes you get caught.
And so there's no worry even after about as to your safety, say?
Well, I'm not carefree enough that I would say I didn't worry. Like I said before, the insulation was built in. But a lot of the times the larger ones acknowledge the fact that they said they'd never get done, and they got done. And
yeah.
It was more of a tip of the hat as opposed to a fist waving.
So today, even, did you take extra precautions?
You know, it's hard to lose. It's hard to lose those traits,
mm-hmm.
Even now. But then again, the stories and the characters, and a lot of them names were changed in the book. These deals are 10, 15, 20 years later, and the time for them to be mad and want to seek revenge have pretty much come and gone. I really didn't think the writing of the books was going to open any old wounds.
What's the closest you've been to buying it?
To buying it?
Yeah. Were there close calls in that regard that you thought that this was it?
There were a couple. And you know, the one that stands out the most, as it turns out, wasn't one at all. I'd been working with the Italian organized crime families in southern Ontario, and as a special treat, they were taking me to a hotel that was still under construction, and I was going to stay there that night. Just the way the whole night went down, and the transportation, and the fact that the hotel wasn't open, and I was deposited in this room, I thought that was the night I was going to be killed. And as it turns out, they're just trying to be nice and reward me with a nice clean room.
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Big Operations, we're hearing a lot about those.
Mm-hmm.
There's controversy over that. You did a lot of those. You sort of perfected the system, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, for people listening who don't know what they are, how do they work, essentially, in catching bad guys?
Well, it's just utilizing the world of undercover techniques and quite simply the suspect, who has to be a suspect, not just a person of interest, is invited into a job interview with Mr. Big. And in order to gain acceptance or a job, rather, in that criminal organization, the person just has to give up something of equal or greater value. And the ones that that I did, and unfortunately I enjoyed a 100% success rate, it's really just a job interview. And if somebody can give me something that they did in life that would be, you know, worthy enough of joining the organization and again, not being able to disrupt my organization. So it's kind of, you have this on me and I have this on you, and now let's go forward and have a great life of crime. I just presented it exactly like that. It's about as milquetoast as you can get.
Yeah. So what's the problem with them now?
Well, you know, they've been under scrutiny, and I've seen some documentaries and reports, and I think, without quoting any of them, I think some of the actions of the undercover people involved were too over the top. I think that's what I'm hearing about where the controversy lies.
And so do you think, I mean, they do play a useful part in law enforcement. They should continue?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The I mean, there's although the police certainly have a rather thick rule book, there's you can certainly utilize everything that that the police have in their arsenal, especially when it comes to something as murder, without throwing that rule book out.
Now, you obviously know the organized crime culture here in Vancouver, Surrey, and the sort the surrounding area of Vancouver. What do you make of what's happening out here?
You know, it's unfortunately, it's not an out here versus over there. It's I've seen it coast to coast, and from a police point of view, it's exhausting. But by the same token, you can't give up. You've got to maintain everything that the police and the governments are doing to combat it. I don't think the people of BC are willing to wave the white flag just because it's it happens to be prevalent.
How has crime changed in the last 20 years, organized crime at that? Are criminals, say, savvier? And how is law enforcement doing? Are they doing better, say, in catching these guys?
I would say for every advance that one side makes, the other side makes as well. And I had a career in policing that was void of social media and social networking. So I believe in hindsight, I actually had it somewhat easier in that if I wanted to meet or talk to somebody, I actually had to meet them and talk to them in person. I think technology is paramount for both sides, and I know neither side is sparing any expense.
Yeah. The one thing that the book does is, I guess, shows the reader a better understanding of crime in one's community.
Mm-hmm.
That, especially for young people, that it isn't a glamorous lifestyle as it might be portrayed in popular culture. I guess that's one of your goals in writing this book, right?
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. And there's a... I met so many people through the career that said that they'll never be caught, and as soon as they said that, you know, I knew I had them. Like, none of the stories end in driving off into the sunset rich and famous. They all end in tears.
Yeah. I can't wait to finish this book, Bob. All the best with it, and congratulations.
Thanks very much. It's great talking to you.
The same. The book is called Being Uncle Charlie, A Life Undercover with Killers, Kingpins, Bikers, and Drug Lords. It's from Random House. It's author Bob Deasy. Join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.